Ad Israel, Amrim Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, The Faces of Man, written by Harriet Kopp, is one program in this Eternal Light series dedicated to the ideals which govern the relationships between man and man.
Papa and Mama loved each other very much, although they didn't always agree. Mama thought Papa was the smartest man who ever lived, that there was nothing that he didn't understand, except people. And Papa always said that Mama was the sweetest and kindest woman in the world, except that everyone took advantage of her. But that never bothered Mama. She used to explain to me.
You see, Ruthie, it's like the miracle of the face. Now, what's a face? Two eyes, a nose, a mouth. Yet since the beginning of creation, God has been fashioning billions and billions of different faces with just these three items, a nose, a mouth, and eyes. It certainly couldn't have been easy. But if it seems so important to the Creator that he went to all that trouble to make each human being different from every other, who am I to think that Papa must be like me, or me just like Papa?
So now we have a new problem, Selma. This time it's Jenny Blum, whoever she is.
Oh, I told you, Sam. She's a member of the Cousin Club. She's married to Jacob, Mars Fisher's sister's boy from Romania.
Mm-hmm.
Jenny and Jacob have only been in this country a few weeks, and she's young. She's frightened. She's having a baby. She says she has a yearning to taste a piece of pickled herring. What she really wants, between you and me, is her mother.
So now you would like me to sign the papers to bring her mother over from the other side.
Sam, why do you always jump to conclusions? I don't want you to help me to bring her mother over to her. All I want for you to do is to help me to bring some pickled herring over to her in Brooklyn. Because every time I take the trolley to Brooklyn, I get lost.
Selma, on a snowy night like this, herring to Brooklyn?
Especially on a night like this. Then she know we must care about her and her baby to go to such trouble in such weather. And for her to know this is the next best thing to bringing her her mother.
Step back in the car. You people sitting, move closer together. You only paid a nickel apiece. Make sure you only take up a nickel's worth of room. Hold your parcels in your lap. Hey, lady, you with the brown hat, get that kid of yours off the seat. He ain't entitled. You got him in free for under six.
Looks more like 10 to me.
That's Mr. Morse, the conductor on the Avenue B trolley. He's always irritable when the trolley's crowded. But on a snowy night like tonight, with soggy transfers and dripping umbrellas, he's even crankier than ever.
Now, two transfers for the Brooklyn Bridge trolley. And may I inform you that the franchise granted your trolley company does not include the right to impugn the veracity of a passenger. If the lady said her child is six, he is six, regardless of whether he looks 10 years old to you.
That's Papa. Crowds make him even crankier than they do the conductor. Papa's a lawyer, and he loves his fellow being in principle, not in person. He loves them at a distance, preferably arm's length. But Mama loves them all, every last wet soul in that car. Even Mr. Morse, the conductor.
Sam, the conductor's not doubting the lady. He's complimenting her, aren't you, mister? Now, what nicer thing can you say to a mother than that her six-year-old looks like 10? As a matter of fact, he's not so big after all. Look, Sam, there's more than enough room next to him for both of us. And the parcel, too. It's not in your way, Sonny?
That's a good boy. Here. Here's a peppermint. But first, ask your mama if you can have it.
And Mama settled back comfortably in her seat, ready to engage in her favorite pastime of making friends with her neighbor, while Papa took out his book, ready to engage in his favorite, making friends with the author. Neither one noticed the package tipping over on its side, and with every jolt of the car, gradually expelling its globs of schmaltz herring onto the floor.
Conductor! Conductor! Hey, mister!
Just a minute there. Can't you read the sign? Do not talk to the motorman while the car is in motion. All right. Now I will. What do you want to know?
Is this the Avenue B line?
Sure, it says so right there.
So what's the reason for the detour? Rains flood the sewers or something?
What's coming off here? You're headed straight for Brooklyn. Haven't missed it yet in 20 years.
Well, if you ain't off the route, then some politician's gone and moved the Fulton Fish Market from Fulton Street to Avenue B. It smelled so close, you'd almost swear it was in the trolley.
Huh?
One sniff and one glance backwards at Mama and Papa on their knees, gingerly fishing for herring fillets, and that conductor stopped as dead in his tracks as was the trolley.
Open your windows, everybody, and button up your coats. We ain't stopping. We're finishing out the run on time. A herring ain't gonna break the perfect record of Motorman Moss.
Everything did run on schedule. The trolley arrived on time. Jenny Blum had her baby on time. Did it, too, without either the herring or her mama. Only Papa was thrown off schedule. It was months before he'd get aboard a trolley. And so he was late walking to his office each morning. But Mama was pleased.
You know, Sam, you never look so good. Mm-hmm. There's no exercise like walking. You look 10 years younger.
God bless you.
Some, if that's the case, I first realize how much walking I must be doing, because every time I think of that trolley ride, I age 10 years.
Oh, thank you, ma'am.
Oh, sometimes, Sam, I think maybe you're right. By trying to help, I seem to do more harm than good. Look what I did that night, for instance.
Thank you, lady.
Pencil, be nice, thanks. I upset you terribly, Sam. Now, don't deny it. I know. I upset the conductor, Mr. Morse, even more. And he, poor man, really can't stand it. He's so irritable to begin with. And I made extra work for the trolley's cleaning crew. Do you know what it is to get the smell of herring off the floor and see? Oh, I've made up my mind, Sam. I'm finished trying to help people.
Thanks, lady.
Selma?
Huh?
If that's your decision, tell me, how do you account for that being the 10th nickel that you've dropped into a beggar's cup since we started our walk?
Well, oh, that's different. This is a form of saving.
Saving?
Sure. All I give are the nickels I save now that we're not riding trolleys.
Selma, don't you realize that most of these men are frauds? That blind beggar, for instance, probably has 20/20 vision behind his dark glasses. And that cripple on the corner, he can throw away his crutches and run the 440 in 45 seconds. In short, 9 out of 10 of these beggars are shamming.
9 out of 10 are fakers? Oh, is that so?
Yes, that's so.
That means only 1 out of 10 is the real thing, a beggar in Wall?
Correct.
And I gave away nickels to all of them, 10 nickels.
That's right. You wasted 9.
Ah, but 1 I didn't. I know I'm weak in arithmetic, but tell me, Sam...
1 out of 10, which is 10%.
Well, what a return on my money. The bank only pays 2%.
Selma.
I was right. It's a wonderful form of saving.
Papa was resigned. He knew that Mama could no more stop helping people than she could stop loving them, or him. But he saw a glimmer of hope when Mama came home late one afternoon.
Oh, you got home before me, Sam? I'm sorry. I ran all the way, but the meeting broke up late.
What meeting?
Oh, I didn't tell you. The Neighborhood Circle Organization for the people in the neighborhood who need help.
Papa was delighted. Now Mama's charitable impulses would be directed in what he considered more effective and impersonal channels.
I got just the position I wanted.
And what's that?
Investigator.
Hmm.
I go to see the cases personally and decide whether we should help them or not.
Papa knew that there wouldn't be any or nots.
Mark my words, Ruthie. With Mama doing the weeding out, sooner or later, the neighborhood circle will have to close its doors.
Papa was almost right. Not quite. The neighborhood circle ladies did object to Mama's uniform classification of each case as imperative, urgent, needing immediate attention. But as they started closing their doors, Mama started opening ours.
Oh, Selma, not company tonight. That's the last thing I feel like. Parlor talk and coffee.
Oh, no. Nothing like that, Sam. Ruthie, answer the bell. Take them inside, please.
Selma, I detect a note of excitement in your voice. I suspect a cunningly devised scheme perpetrated against an innocent victim, namely me.
Oh, Sam, you a victim. When all I'm thinking of is you, of how to make you happy.
Oh, in that case, I'm to assume that there's a client waiting inside with an important case.
Oh, that's only business. This is much more important than that. This is a blessing. A special blessing for you.
My darling wife, I don't want to seem ungrateful, but...
Samuel, night after night you sit here reading, studying. And night after night I sit here watching you. Now, mind you, I'm not complaining. But while I'm watching, I'm thinking, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to think about what you once told me a great rabbi said. There is nothing more futile than to learn enough to teach. And I thought how sad you must be with all your learning going to waste.
Don't I teach you and Ruthie?
Oh, naturally. We're family. We're part of you. But the Talmud says, he who teaches his neighbor's son will deserve to sit in the heavenly academy.
Hmm. And which neighbor's son am I to help to an honorary degree from the heavenly academy?
It's Mr. Reuben's son from down the block. But he's not a neighbor anymore. That's the problem. He's run off and left Mrs. Reuben with the three children. Nathan's the oldest and almost finished with high school. Oh, here they are. Mrs. Reuben, Natey, this is my husband.
Mr. Newman, I really appreciate your helping me to finish up high school quicker. I need that diploma in a hurry now that I got to support a family. I sure am grateful.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all, son. This is my pleasure.
I said to your wife, Mr. Newman, wouldn't my Nady be imposing, coming up here every night, bothering your husband with his homework? But you know what she said?
That you were doing me a favor? That it was really a blessing in disguise?
Those were her very words. How did you know?
It wasn't hard. Papa knew everything about Mama. He knew that Mama could no more help loving than she could help breathing. That she was so filled with love that once in a while, like now, it even overbrimmed and spilled over on him. Papa's patience might stretch for a Mrs. Reuben, but even Mama knew enough not to test its elasticity on Mordecai Levy. Papa's patience was always shortest in the morning, and that was the time of day that invariably brought Mr. Levy to our door, his heavy case loaded with ladies' lingerie at his side.
You see, Mrs. Newman, I always begin my day with my regular customers. I sit down for a cup of coffee, very hot. Two spoons of sugar and plenty of cream, please.
Uh-huh.
Maybe a piece of cookie.
Oh, certainly, Mr. Lee.
I sell a couple pairs of stockings, a petticoat. After such a call, I have the strength to hold my foot in the closing of doors. I face the rest of the day.
Mama could certainly understand the trials of Mordecai Levy, but she also sympathized with Papa.
Selma, I grant you that Mr. Levy, trying to earn a living carrying heavy cases from door to door, deserves my respect. And believe me, he has it. Sit with him, buy from him, feed him, but please don't ask me to sit through one of his interminable visits while you do it.
So, Mama worked out a system.
Oh, I'll go, Sam. Sit down for breakfast. It's your favorite, scrambled eggs and fresh rolls. Oh, it's you, Mr. Levy. Good morning. My husband was just saying, isn't it time for Mr. Levy to be coming around? Sam, guess who's here? It's Mr. Levy.
That was Mama's signal to Papa.
Oh, hello, Mr. Levy. Sorry I have to rush off some. I'm due in court.
Oh, what a shame. Mr. Newman didn't have a chance to touch his breakfast after I went to such trouble. Could you perhaps help me out, Mr. Levy? Such fresh eggs. Ruthie, some hot coffee for Mr. Levy.
I wasn't as fortunate as Papa.
Now, let's see what treasures you have for Ruthie and me in your cases today, Mr. Levy.
This was the moment I dreaded, serving as model for Mr. Levy's wares, which he would unpack out of layers of tissue paper, as if he were about to hold up a Schiaparelli original.
Here, Mrs. Newman, a beautiful pair of silk bloomers for Ruthie, guaranteed to wear like iron. You can believe this manufacturer. He's one of the oldest and most respectable in the business.
And so were the bloomers that Mr. Levy held up, as dated and out of style as long hair and women's suffragettes. But Mr. Levy would never guess that from Mama.
Beautiful, Mr. Levy. Such a lovely color pink. Perfect to wear with your new pink dress, eh, Ruthie? Here, hold them to your waist.
Mama, they're down below my knees. They'll stick out of my dress.
I'll tighten the elastics. Well, a perfect fit, Mr. Levy. That's the way I like them cut. Roomy, for our active young girls of today. So now, what do I owe you, Mr. Levy?
$6 for stockings, $8 for petticoats, $3...
And Mama would pay Mr. Levy twice what she would have paid in the stores for things for which she had no need.
These, Ruthie, nobody will see them. And what could be nicer than pure silk bloomers to match a girl's first party dress?
Mama, I'd rather wear burlap overalls or long red flannels. Anything at all than these.
Oh.
Mama, burn them, bury them, lose them, but don't make me wear them. What did I ever do to Mr. Levy that he should punish me like this?
Ruthie, it's not what you did to Mordecai Levy, but what you do for him that counts. Now, if we buy things from Mordecai Levy and make no use of them, what happens to Mr. Levy? He is no longer a businessman. He becomes a beggar, trading pity, not merchandise. Ruthie, these aren't bloomers you hold in your hands. They're an old man's self-respect and pride.
What else could I do? I wore them, and just as I predicted, they started slipping.
And I sat, Mama, the rest of the dance, stuck to my chair like those bloomers were made of glue, not of silk. And what makes me angrier than anything else is that all the girls thought I was sitting there because no one wanted to dance with me. That I was a wallflower at my first party.
Ruthie, darling, maybe a wallflower, but a very rare species of wallflower. Botanically classified, a creeping bloomer.
Papa passed it off lightly with a joke, but not Mama. It was there and then that she turned over a new leaf.
I've made up my mind. I've been a very selfish woman, giving away to others what did not belong to me to give. First, I took from Papa his precious hours of study and gave them away to Natie Rubin. Then I took from Ruthie the joys and memories of a girl's first party and gave them away to old Mr. Levy. Well, no more. If I want to help others, it will be I, not you and Papa, who do the helping. I promise, Ruthie.
And Mama was as good as her word, even when her latest venture turned out to be her most ambitious to date. It all started from such a very small beginning, as small as a pocket-sized sandwich.
Selma, any kind of a little dry sandwich will do, as long as I can slip it into my coat pocket. I won't have time to stop for lunch today.
A dry sandwich? And you call that lunch for a grown man? Now, what is it today, a brief or an affidavit? A man must sit down for an hour quietly in the middle of the day.
That I promise you. I'll sit for an hour on the subway. Darling, a lawyer's duties sometimes run far afield, even up to the Bronx, to managing an apartment house as part of a client's estate.
Do me a favor.
For you anytime.
Don't make me fix you a sandwich.
Only that? All right. I'll buy one at the delicatessen.
No sandwich. Go in and have a hot lunch. My treat. Briefs, affidavits, I can't help. But here is something I should be able to do if you'll just teach me. Now, how complicated can it be? It's dealing with tenants. And after all, what are tenants?
Just people.
Right there, Mama and Papa should have seen the pitfall, but they didn't. They were both too eager. Papa to drop a labor he disliked, and Mama to pick up a labor of love. And it did go beautifully at first, until Mr. Johansson, the superintendent, was injured stoking the furnace. Oh, it was easy enough to find someone to take over some of his duties, but rent collecting was a different matter. As Mama said,
you just can't have total strangers suddenly ringing the tenants' bells and demanding the rent. Besides, Mr. Johansson will be up and around in a few weeks, so for this 1 month, I'll be the rent collector. If Mr. Johansson can do it, why can't I?
And Papa said,
a perfectly logical question, with a psychological answer.
Mama couldn't do it because it involved her making demands on people, not people making demands on her.
So what could I say to Apartment 2E? Her husband just lost his job yesterday. They're laying off people right and left, she told me. Mm-hmm. She had the rent already, but I told her better to give me just half.
Selma.
Next month, things will look brighter, and she can give Mr. Johansson the rest. And I think tomorrow I'll bring her some strudel and lollipops for the children.
Tomorrow? All the way back to the Bronx tomorrow just to bring a present to 2E?
Well, I still have to do the collecting on the third, fourth, and fifth floors. I spend a lot of time with 2E. And then you can't just collect rent, say thank you, turn around, and walk out. It's not like they're strangers. Common courtesy requires that you sit down for a moment when they invite you in to meet the children. Have a little visit. Cup of coffee.
How many cups of coffee did you have?
5. Oh, and 1 tea. That was in 1B. Coffee gives her palpitation.
Mm. 5 coffees and a cup of tea. That means you collected only 6 rents in 1 day. Selma, at that rate, you'll be collecting rents for a whole week.
And she did. Day after day, along with the tenants' rents, Mama collected their problems and worries and distributed joy and comfort of her own special kind.
Mama, can I help?
No, thank you, Ruthie. Let's see now. A pot of mushroom and barley soup for 4F. She's sick in bed. Baby sweater and booties for 2E. She's expecting her 5th. And, magazines for the teacher in 3A. And Papa won't miss his electric pad. Maybe it will help 5D with his arthritis.
But on the 4th day, it took its toll.
Let's see now. I'm supposed to have 6 bundles, 3 bar soup.
Selma, Gesundheit, and it's out of the question. You are not stepping out of the house today.
Now,
I haven't said anything, but I've been watching. Only you could start with a rent box collection and snowball it into a community chess campaign.
Oh, Sab, please.
Selma, please. Now, you get back into bed.
But I...
Now, by the time you take a nap, Ruthie and I will be back with the rent collection completed as it should have been a week ago.
Papa was as good as his word. By the time we walked back into the house, Mama was just waking up.
That you, Sam?
Ah, you look better already.
Well... How did it go?
Finished. It was easy. Knock on the door. Rent, please. Thank you. See you next month. Goodbye. Next apartment. No coffee. No visits. Strictly business.
Papa, it's for you. Dr. Schwartz.
Oh, yeah. Hello, Dr. Schwartz. I called your office earlier. I left word that I'd called you back. Hmm? No. It's all right. Why, I sound uncomfortable. No, doctor, don't be foolish. Why should it be awkward for me to talk to you? No, look, doctor, I want you to do me a favor. On your evening calls...
Sam, I don't need a doctor. It's only a cold.
Selma, please. On your evening calls, doctor, would you go uptown to 1430 Walton Avenue? Yeah, it's an apartment house in the Bronx. There are a couple of people I'd like you to see. In apartment 5D, an old man crippled with arthritis. Yes. And 4F. No. F as in flu. There's a lady there with a bad case of it.
Papa, don't forget the baby in 2E who fell out of his high chair.
Oh, and Ruthie thinks we should make it worth your while, doctor. So drop in and check the baby in 2E, too, hmm? Good. And, doctor, send the bill to me.
Papa looked at Mama, his face aflame with embarrassment. Mama looked at Papa, her face aglow with love.
Ruthie, remember what I once told you about the miracle of the faces?
How God was so careful to make each person different from every other one?
Well, I just learned something new. He only made the differences skin deep.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mrs. Charles Himes of Minneapolis, National President of the National Council of Jewish Women and a member of President Kennedy's Commission on the Status of Women, Mrs. Himes.
In this busy, impersonal world, it is possible to forget that the greatest gift you can give is yourself. Our mothers knew it, and many other mothers know it today. They know intuitively that we cannot withdraw from other people's problems. We cannot remain uninvolved. Even in this day of bigness, aloofness, and complexity, we need to remember that the world is made up of people and that we are related to them. Women know that if you give of yourself, you get enormous returns. You find yourself. Women have learned that this is their role, and in giving, they have become more womanly. And they have also learned that the more you give, the more you have to give. It proceeds in a geometric progression. Today, there are many more opportunities for women to be of service, both on an individual and personal basis, and on an organizational scale. We have the privilege and satisfaction of working not only where we can solve a single and immediate problem, but where we can aid the community, even our nation, on a long-range issue. The situation may be as close as the day nursery down the street, or as seemingly remote as the United Nations. We do not work alone. Often we join with other women who have the same ideals and goals. Our voices swell into a chorus, and our acts grow into a movement. Behind our deeds, there must be a genuine belief in what we are doing and faith in the ultimate good we can achieve. The National Council of Jewish Women believes in personal commitment. We believe that even when we belong to a great organization, we must continue to act as individuals and to carry out our ideals in our personal lives. We believe that our daily acts, both large and small, are the true measure of our faith and the foreshadowing of what this world can be. Our code of personal commitment, developed jointly by the National Council of Jewish Women and the Young Women's Christian Association, states, "As I build, so is the world built. And if I am indifferent, I abandon the world."
Thank you, Mrs. Himes. Our eternal light drama today, The Face of Man, written by Harriet Kopp, was one program in this Eternal Light series dedicated to the ideals which govern the relationships between man and man. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Mary Jane Higby as Mama, Mandel Kramer as Papa, Barbara Myers played Ruthie, with Martin Newman, Adelaide Klein, Sam Raskin, and Ralph Bell. Patricia Wheel was the narrator. This is Vic Roby. Our program was directed by Daniel Sutter. Portions of this program were pre-recorded. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.